for coming back to the Sound Pollution Podcast this week. We are a little busy. We have lots of new interviews coming your way. We are completely booked through September. Things got a little away from us this week, which is fine because I've been meaning to do this. I've been meaning to drop a best of 2023 episodes.
This is part two of that two-part series. And up first, this is episode 147, Artemis Wolves.
I want to talk about the one, and Brent, you're just going to be quiet this time. This
is, I'll be quiet.
Are we talking about Meltdown?
Yeah, we're talking about Meltdown.
We just added some new Meltdown merch too. I'm in the mood to talk about Meltdown.
Oh, good, because I want some Meltdown merch. So I don't know what I have to do to get Meltdown merch other than buy it, but I want some Meltdown merch. But we're gonna actually talk about feelings, you and I, for a second, which is something this podcast doesn't always do very well. I even commented on the song on Instagram Instagram. I have never felt more understood by a song, possibly in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't have ADD, although my father would disagree with that, and probably my mother, but I have incredibly debilitating anxiety. I have the anxiety that for years it was hard to leave my own house. I have anxiety where if it feels like I choked on something wrong, I'm now in the bathroom hyperventilating. And when the anxiety is up here and I can't find my fucking car keys, the world has to suffer with me.
Yeah.
And there's no controlling it. And a lot of people will be like, oh, you can control your emotions. No, I can't, because it's why it's called panic disorder. Because it's a disorder. It's an actual clinical. I don't have control. My brain goes, we're overwhelmed. The mask is off. Now you're dying. And it's meltdown, 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 meltdown. And I listen to it and I'm like, I know this is about ADD. Like, I know that, but I often find that their ADD and anxiety have a lot of things in common, actually. Mm-hmm. On a personal level, it was funny. It was a little bit about me, which is probably not that good of a thing because it sucks. Cause I was like, yeah, I melt down. Oh, absolutely. And it's everybody's problem. And no, I don't want to fix it. Well, I want to fix it, but I can't. It's not just going to be fixed. And the line, what the fuck rhymes with purple? I stopped it like the second time I listened to it. And I was like, what does rhyme with purple?
Oh, yeah.
And I actually felt some anxiety rise as I was like trying to Google what rhymes with purple because other than fucking purple.
Because the beat keeps going while you're thinking. So you're like, I'm running out of time.
it feels like a clock melt and you're like, and that is what leaving the house feels like. When you have anxiety, that is what other people consider a minor inconvenience can actually ruin my whole day. And it's not because I'm a drama queen. It's because my brain takes those cues and instead of them staying here where they're supposed to be, I'm going to freeze or run. And then I have to look back and be like, sorry, I'm not medicated, bro. I don't want to tell you.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Like,
Do you have ADD? Or did you just write it for someone else?
So here's the thing is I have made this conscious decision at the start of all of this to, you know, keep most of my actual medical diagnoses is kind of hidden.
This caught me.
I will say that this song does apply to me, for a couple of different reasons. I definitely wrote this. This is one of the songs where I had an easier time writing this than some of the other ones for sure.
Gotcha.
I'll put it that much. And so the reason that, one of the reasons that it's been fun is that, like, I did a duet today where I've been really enjoying watching. So people don't know this about me, but, like, I watch a lot of TikTok, right? And I do love Z. Yeah, I watch a lot of it, and I do like when people use my sound, but my favorite thing ever is when people do blind reacts to my music, because that's the only time I get to see people react to it, right? And so I like watching, seeing their face be like, what is this song about? What's going on? So the one I did today, same thing you're talking about. Like, he was like listening to it. You could tell it. He was like, okay, this beat's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But the second that I said keys, he was like, Yeah. And I was like, yes, that's my favorite thing ever.
Dude, you don't understand. Like, I play that for my kid.
Yeah.
And she looked at me dead in the face and was like, that is us every time we leave the house. And I was like, us? She was like, no, it's you.
Yeah. I will say that writing that – so I started writing that song when we were still doing the Kickstarter, and I wouldn't finish it until after I was back in the woods, fully funded, ready to go. It was one of the easier songs to write. Like, it's actually kind of not – I wish it was more interesting, but – when we were doing the Kickstarter, I would spend every day, I would wake up at about, 11, because I worked till like, I got home at 3 in the morning every day, so I would sleep till like 10 or 11. I'd wake up, have just enough time to get like adult things done, but then I'd have like 1 hour at my computer to start working on Chaos before I had to go back to my grocery store job. Mm-hmm. And nothing derailed me worse than being like, okay, that means I have 50 minutes because I need to leave 10 minutes beforehand. And then I'd get up and go and my keys would be gone. I'd be like, where the fuck are my keys?
Fucking day.
It was a good song to write because I was like, that was at a point where I was still figuring it out. But I was like, okay, one thing that this album cannot be is it cannot be me standing on a box looking around and saying, this is your problem, this is your problem, this is your problem. Like, this whole album has to apply to me. And so when I decided that I wanted to do like a meltdown song, first of all, there's the beat situation where I was like, okay, I want it to sound
like it's
coming from different directions, like a clock that's inside out that's – I want it to sort of like scratch, because if you have ADHD, right, that beat will do things to you because there's multiple rhythms happening in different mm-hmm. directions, and so it will weirdly keep your attention. So that was the first thing I wanted to get them.
So that was it. That was on purpose.
Every molecule of that song is on purpose.
Because I felt it, yeah.
Because then it goes through one cycle before the lyrics actually start. Because I wanted it to sort of like bring your attention and be like, hey, are you looking? Okay. Where the fuck are my keys? Like right now. Where are they? And when I was writing it, I was like, okay, one thing I hate about some comedy songs is they try to go too big. They're like, I want this to be a song about meltdown. So they would have started the verse off with something like, like, I'm going to throw a tangent. I'm going to throw a fit. I'm like, no. The best way to get someone to understand a big concept is to zero in on something so specific they think that you're spying on them. So I was like, keys. I forgot my password.
Oh, the password. And now I'm locked out. Or password can't be old password.
Oh, my God. About to go to work, but I need my keys. Like, about to go to work. That right there causes the anxiety. But then when you say I can't find my keys, there's millions of people that affects. So it's like, that song was really easy because all I had to do was just pay attention to my own life. What sets me off? Oh, I can't find my keys. Because it's not about the keys. The problem is that I have things to do today and I'm stressed out. The keys are just the match. And this whole album's about talking about the match and actually lighting it yourself so that you can walk away unscathed. So it's like, let's talk about the keys real quick. Let's talk about how I can't find them.
And did you ever find out what the fuck rhymed with purple?
No. And that actually happened during a live stream. I was in the woods and I was like, guys, I have to move on to Saddy Daddy-O and get it mastered before we get the album in there. So we were in live stream because I broadcasted all of this of making this album. And I was sitting there and there was like 7 people watching. I was like, guys, we need like one more line. Like, and then I started laughing. I was like, guys, what if the last part of this song is like meta? What if it's about writing this song?
Yeah.
Need another verse, but it rhymes with purple. I was like, oh, dude, that would be so funny. And so we like wrote it like right there on the spot. So it came together really naturally.
I love it. I felt understood and attacked at the same time.
The other thing I want to point out that someone picked up on is, some people have been sort of debating. A few people have been like, well, you do know that this is not a choice, right? But you don't know that, like, it's not a choice. It's like, you don't want to meltdown.
I don't feel like you're ever saying that it's a choice. I think you're like, here's what this is like.
Yeah.
And I have a match and I have gasoline.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put them together because I can't find my keys.
Well, and here's the thing, though, is that, like, the way that I write, like, I set booby traps all over my songs because I know that those people will exist and they can help out. So one thing that someone picked up on last week was they were like, did anybody else notice that this is the only song on the album where he has dropped his voice down an entire octave?
I didn't even think of that.
It's not up here. It's where the fuck are my keys? It's yes. down. Everything's been pitched down an octave. And that's because the narrator in this song is the voice inside his head. He's convincing him that he doesn't have a choice, that he just wants to, like, no, you don't have a choice. Come on, throw a fit. Do it. Like, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. So people have started picking up on this because they're listening and they're paying attention, which has been really fun. So yeah, if you listen to it again, you'll notice that, like, it's
now
not
I'm
my
be
voice.
Like, oh,
it's
panic,
deeper.
Panic has another voice. The panic has another voice.
So it's right. For some people, like, melting down is not a choice, but that's the character talking to you saying, like, hey, you should throw a fit right now, shouldn't you? Yeah, you should.
From episode 149, Trashy Annie.
So let's talk about the new album. Specifically, how did you come up with the name Sticks and Stones for this? Or not how, but we all have heard of Sticks and Stones. But why? Why did you choose that name?
Yeah, it took me a little while to figure out what I was going to name the album. But as I told you guys previously, I kind of gave you the backstory on the name, on where the Trashy Annie name came from. And it was, you know, a lady being mean to me on social media about the clothes that I wear being too young for me. And so that sort of sparked something in me, because initially, like I told you guys on the last interview, you know, it was kind of heartbreaking to have somebody get on there and say mean stuff without it. They don't know anything, you know, they don't know anything about the backstory. They don't know how much work went into all this or how much vulnerability you put out on the table when you put your stuff out there. And to just kind of make flip remarks about the clothes you wear, it just seems so ridiculous. And so, of course, that, again, kind of broke my heart for like 10 minutes until I was like, screw this lady, you know, whatever, do what you want to do, wear what you want to wear. I don't give a shit what age you are. And so that was how the Trashy Annie name came to be. Well, then, you know, the horrors of social media all along the way have reared their ugly head, because people will just get on and say mean stuff all the time. I get lots of, I mean, you know, 90% amazing feedback from people, and our fans are so awesome and supportive, because most of them have been following this story and the evolution of me and of Trashy Annie all along the way. And they're just so great and supportive. But you also get these asshats who will get on there and just say whatever, you know, trolling, And so
haters,
it's the worst. And who cares? I don't care. My music is not for everybody. Nobody's music is for everybody. That's fine. I don't care. But do you really need to go on and say something mean just for the sake of saying something mean? It doesn't make any sense to me. I would never do that to anybody else. And so it's always been really confusing to me that social media is like this safe place for people to be assholes to each other for no reason. So anyway, I started screenshotting the comments that people would make that were mean, and thought, man, I can do something with this. And so when it came time to name the album, I put all of the screenshots of all these horrible things people have said on the back of the album. So that's the album art. And then the front is called Sticks and Stones, and it's just a big glitter middle finger saying, you know, that's fuck y'all. It's pretty great. And it kind of, for me, the Trashy Annie brand is all about that. It's about being yourself and not listening to people who are mean to you, you know, and just doing, you know, being your best self, and you do you. And so for me, this sort of embodied that by calling this album Sticks and Stones, because I'm going to do this thing, and it makes me proud, and it makes me happy to be able to put this stuff out into the world. And I worked really, really hard on it. And I think it came out great. And if people don't like it, it's okay. You know, I hope they do, but not everybody likes everybody's stuff. And that's an okay thing, but it's not okay to be mean to people for no reason. It really isn't. So that's where the name came from.
Well, it goes back to that saying that I teach my children. Sometimes people are just assholes.
That is a great saying.
Word.
To teach your children. Good for you, Brent.
Until they use it in school.
Yeah, so great.
So speaking of that theme of just embracing who you are and you know, people being assholes for no reason, let's talk about the first track. Let's talk about Born Pretty. I love this track. I love what it represents. I think it's beautiful. I think it's fun. Tell us about it.
Thanks. So it's this is probably, it's at least one of my favorites on the album, if not my favorite. And I think I like the lyrics because it's just about a girl who is okay with herself. And, you know, the lyrics are about, she's got a glass eye and a limp and little bitty titties and a gap tooth and all the things, you know. And the boys judge her and say how you make it in this big bad city. And she says, I guess I got lucky. I was just born this pretty. And I think that it's just a way to say, be yourself and be okay with that. You know, no matter what you look like or what people say about it or what age you are, any of the things. And that's why I love it so much, because of what it represents. And I think the tune is also catchy and fun. And it's kind of an empowerment tune, you know, for anybody. Women, men, whatever.
100%.
But, you know, so I think that's why I like it so much, and I'm really proud of it, and I love how it came out, and it rocks, man. It's fun. It's got a good groove, and the band is fucking, they sound killer on it. So I really like that tune a lot. Proud of it.
Yeah, it's a great song. Specifically, I like the intro is pretty cool because it sounds like it has bells at the beginning of the song. Are those actual bells?
There aren't. It's just a guitar at the beginning. And I don't think we did any kind of cowbell or anything like that with it. I can't remember because we did so much of it kind of in pieces. And then Jeff went and, you know, made the magic happen, mixing everything together. And who knows what little Easter egg stuff he threw in there to kind of give it some sparkle. So it's possible. I don't think so, but it's definitely possible. And I know what you're talking about. It's got that kind of sonic sound of like a kind of like a bell at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was hearing it and I was like, am I hearing this right? When I first heard it, I was like, that sounds like bells. That's kind of cool. But the riff of that song is really good too. And the guitarist gets to play, and I appreciate that. My favorite lyric, you've already mentioned some of, unibrow longer than an old highway, lazy glass eye that keeps on rolling away, short right leg, and I got a little sway, but a girl with a limp never had a bad day. So those are great lyrics. So specifically writing that, what made you link unibrow and glass eye together? What was it about those two that you were like, this is a marriage?
I don't know that I can tell you the answer to that. Some of those lyrics sort of come to me. The way that I write music is almost always visual. I kind of visualize a person or a scenario or something along those lines and kind of write around that concept. So in my mind, I was kind of picturing a person, right? Like a person that had an eye patch or like a unibrow that she's got to shave every day or doesn't, you know, and hairy ass armpits and, you know, no bra and a wife beater. Like I'm just picturing a person like that. It's like, fuck it, this is me, take it or leave it. And so I don't know how it all sort of came together lyrically like that, but I like that. I like those lines too. I will say, I like the unibrow. And it was kind of sometimes I think about how to write a song. I'll have like a prompt, like, okay, let me see if I can write a song that has to do with a unibrow. And so sometimes you can kind of build out from there, you know, and this might've come from a little bit of that as well.
Corner by the city limit sign, I chip my tooth down on Hollywood and Vine. Greasy long hair, but I like the way it shines. A little bitty booty, but I shake it just fine.
Episode 150, Sir James of Masonic Block.
If you need that second guitarist for anything, you just reach out to Brent, apparently.
So I think that would be that sort of, and if we can get, not even finish that over the next year, but get really well into that, If not this summer, definitely by next summer, I'd like to do a number of shows again, because we haven't in a while. But I kind of want, I want to balance it out by really working on some new studio material, and then knowing that we have some of that in the can and going out and doing some summer shows. Whether that's going to be this summer or next summer is unclear at the moment. So it's going to be my, you know, our 12th album, the next one, not the one that's going to drop this summer, but the one after that we're going to work on over the next year. And that's important to me, because I feel like if I do no more than that, that's a canon, right? That's a collection of work, right? If I never do anything else beyond, even though I think I will.
I'm but pretty also, sure you will.
I probably won't know how to stop, even if I should.
I don't think you do know how to stop.
Right.
I think you get scared if you don't have enough to do. So you're like, God damn it. I'm tired of thinking about this. I'm going to do a double album this time.
Yeah. Well, we are looking at maybe doing a double album retrospective. We've never released anything on vinyl. And something that we'd like to do, it might not be for another couple of years. I hope it's not longer than that, is finally issue some stuff on vinyl and do like a double album vinyl release of a sort of a retrospective.
Can you do a live double album? That would be awesome. That would be so off the hook, dude.
You gonna pay for the manufacturing? You gonna press those records for me?
Oh my God, it's so expensive.
No, but I'll be your cheerleader. I'll be your cheerleader, though.
Yeah, so expensive. But I would love to do that. That is one of those few things that's still like never gotten there, doing a vinyl release. And that's what I was going to say, is that that sort of round number of like the 12th studio album is also, I really believe in albums. I'm somebody who has been really influenced by bands, not just particular songs, but full albums that have really moved me. Everything from like Beatles White Album to Radiohead Kid A to, you know, Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, you know, all sorts of stuff. I love albums. And for me, even though they're sort of out of favor or whatever, I think that they occupy a really important place in music to this day.
And there's nothing better than having an album that you can put on and listen from beginning to end. Absolutely. And take that with you, especially after like a long week or a breakup or whatever it is. And it's just, it's nice.
Something I loved that Jack White said about vinyl in particular is that you surrender yourself to the music more when you put on a record.
Yeah.
Because the record is in charge. Because you have to listen to the whole thing and then get up and flip it over and then listen to the other side. You are surrendering yourself to the music in a way that a lot of people who don't put themselves in that situation, they treat music like it's background, it's wallpaper. But by surrendering yourself and actually being secondary to the music and letting that lead the way, that there is a different experience there. And I think that is connected to the album as a work of art.
So let's jump on to the second song we're going to talk about on this recording. And then at the very end, when we're done with the episode, then we'll talk about the third one that I'll put on Patreon. Let's talk about My Love. I just want to say that I loved that song. It brought me, it's like old school punk rock, man. And I was just, I don't even think, I mean, you said in the email, it's like a love song, but I didn't even listen to the lyrics. I was just like, yeah, like it was awesome.
I wrote that for who is now my wife, but when I wrote it initially for her, I wrote it on an acoustic guitar, and the guitar parts didn't change. Mm-hmm. But then one day I showed it to my bandmates and I was like, screw it. Let's punk it up. And I played it distorted and I thought, okay, this is going to sound like a mess. And it does to some degree. But after the fact, I was like, this is really like kind of my love of the Ramones. Hard driving punk song that's also a love song, which is what I always loved about the Ramones, was the way they would marry really driving distorted guitars with these pop melodies that Joey Ramone would sing. I loved that connection of 70s punk with like a 60s pop sort of sound. I wasn't consciously going for that at the time, but after the fact I was like, oh, that's kind of what this song is like.
Punk song, very cool. But as soon as the vocalist comes on, the vocal tone reminded me of Geddy Lee of Rush.
Really? Wow.
Now he definitely has a higher voice.
Yeah.
but the enunciation and how it sounded, and I think it was the distortion, because I think when Getty is on the mic, he really drives the mic with his vocals.
Yeah.
And so that's probably what I heard. But then that the chorus is like so pop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a totally, oh man, dude, I was thinking, man, I would have loved to have mixed this song. just because it's so catchy in the chorus. And I listened to the chorus quite a few times. In this round, this was my favorite song. I kept listening to the lyrics and I could never quite make them out. So can you tell me what the lyrics are to the chorus?
Something to the effect of, fear I can't make it on my own, and I don't want to walk this life alone. And that's the chorus a couple of times, and then it doubles the last couple of times where it then...
There's a statement about bone or something like that.
Yes, you warm my heart and chill me to the bone.
That's a cool line.
Episode 151, Brooks of York.
Anyway, aside from kids, where were we? I got distracted with kids.
I don't know.
Big to the Sky. Tell us about it.
The instrumentation is kind of me moving, not necessarily away from more guitar forward stuff, but really pushing into more synth driven sound. So things that I have yet to release are just kind of like sitting on the back burner. Like they're done. I just have to manage my time a little bit better. They're going to be more synth forward, like some sample stuff in there as well. So Big to the Sky is kind of like that bridge from having this very clean guitar driven sound into one that's a little bit more synth driven. But I mean, ultimately I still think it's kind of dreamy. The title itself. So all my song titles are things that my kids have said. So out of context, it's kind of like, what does that mean? What is Big to the Sky? And my kid was talking to me and talking about how, you know, like we grow up and, she was like, well, you know, at first you're small And then we get big to the sky. And like, you know, when kids are like super, super small and they're kind of putting words together and there's this innocent element to it as they're still kind of figuring it out. All my song titles are really that. And I just have a list of those on my phone that I reference. So as I get to a track, I'll just go back through like the ones that I haven't used. And, you know, I'm always writing new ones down. It's like, all right, what fits this? And it's usually just you go down the list. You're like, that's the one. That's the one for this track.
So I like the beginning. It really sounds like there's a heartbeat at the beginning.
Oh, right on.
It's really close to it. You have a nice full sound, and the vocal harmonies about 30 seconds into it are really cool.
Thanks.
There's cool vocal panning to the left and to the right as you're going through the song at different times.
I do a lot of double tracking, especially on harmonies, and a lot of wide panning in general. And the engineer, producer I work with, Sam Stoff, me and him are very aligned when it comes to that. Whenever I'm writing, it's like, you know, you get the basic idea down, right? It's like first chorus, bridge, out, something like that. It's kind of like what I stick to. It might be little breaks in between. With my process, I'll just go through and usually like I'll hear something and I'll be like, oh, this should be there. And like, it's not currently there, but I just feel like, I don't know, like I heard it by accident, or maybe it was like a delay trail that kind of sounded like this other thing. So at some point I was like, I really want like some big toms there, and like nothing was big enough. And I was like, oh, let's try fucking timpani, 'cause like those are cool. But no, I also like the idea of blending in like non-traditional elements. I mean, I think that's what's great about working inside, you know, a digital box. 'Cause like I've never performed any of these songs. I've never practiced any of these songs. It's all like, you know, I have a part which leads to another part. I end up laying it down and then I come back to it a few days later and ends up getting fleshed out over the period of like a few months. So, you know, I heard what sounded like timpanis. I was like, this needs to go in here. That's usually how like a lot of the vocal layering happens too, where I'm like, oh, let's try that. And I'm a huge fan of vocal layering. I think it's a great way to like just increase like tension sometimes or increase, you know, like the intensity of what's going on. And you know, I'm always like hypercritical of, you know, repeating a chorus too many times. 'Cause like some of the people I listen to the most, I'm like, God damn, this song's like 4.5 minutes long. It doesn't need to be. Mostly stuff like from the 80s and 90s. And I have severe ADHD. So I'm like, what can I add in to like keep somebody's interest and also have it sound cool?
You don't need to.
and episode 154, Art of Everclear.
That's an exciting song. I'm so glad that you're going to release that because, you know, some people just stick to their popular songs. And that is, in my opinion, that's more of what y'all do. Y'all are just like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Let's go. Let's play. And I love that.
Pretty much. That's what we've always been. And Everclear fans know that. But, you know, a lot of people will come see us play that might know our singles. And they'll be like, whoa, what is going on? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to be this and this? No, man, they're trying to be whatever what they've always been. A cross between a punk, hard rock band with a singer-songwriter. That's what Everclear is. That's what we've always been.
And the guitar tone on that, the guitar tone on Heroin Girl on that live footage is to die for. It's Thank so you. Thick and fat and just, oh. I was like, why can't I never get anything like that?
You can. You know what? And I love that you're asking. We don't use amps. We use Line 6 Helixes. We use a board that creates amp sounds, and we use them live. We use them in the studio. And I've had all these people go, oh, man, I know that amp. That's a 67 Plexi with blah, blah, blah. I go, it actually is a 67 Plexi program, you know, live sampled amp. And it's just, it makes it so much easier for touring. And when we go on stage, we know what our amp sound's going to be like. I don't have a lot of noise on stage, so it doesn't compete with my vocals and I don't have to strain my voice. And also, we're doing so many shows. We're doing 95 shows this year. 95.
Yeah.
And so far, none have dropped out, so I don't imagine any are going to. And it's a lot. 30 shows on the tour that starts on September 6th. We're touring with the Ataris and a band called the Pink Spiders out of Nashville.
That's a great band name, Pink Spiders.
They're great. They've been around since 2005. Check them out. They're really good.
I'm gonna.
They're fun.
The tour starts September 6th. Do you know the first few cities you're hitting?
First one is Lexington, Kentucky. And then Nashville, Indiana. We are going to play Nashville, Tennessee, but Nashville, Indiana.
Right.
The Chicago area, actually Lamont. It's right. It's a suburb of Chicago. And then Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then Cleveland, Buffalo, Washington, D.C., Philly, Long Island, Boston, New York City. And it just goes from there. And we'll end up back on here on the West Coast in October. Our last show is on October 15th. We play L.A. on October 8th, I think. So, yeah, and we're playing San Francisco, a great club called the August Hall. Man, it's just a great tour. It's going to be a lot of fun. But on top of those 30 dates of those shows, we've got another 65 shows. We played 17 shows in Australia in February, and that was a great tour. Yeah. And I'm going back and doing a solo tour this next February. So we're busy, 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 and I'm working and working. And, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to work. I've got multiple sclerosis. I could be in a wheelchair. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Not with the way you sound like you're taking care of yourself.
I'm working
the swimming and the yoga and the physical therapy is going to do wonders. I'm a caregiver, so I just know.
Yeah, I am too. I'm a caregiver as well. I work really hard to, like, I do my medication. I do my diet. And there's also with my recovery, there's a spiritual aspect to it, too, that is really important. Like I said earlier, it's the glue that ties everything together.
Brent, do you want to ask about one more song before we?
I would. Sing Away, I found an acoustic version of that. An acoustic version in 2020, I think I found acoustic. That was fantastic. That song made me cry. But what anyway, Sing Away.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So yeah, that's on the live. That's on the solo record. That's on my solo record that came out in 2019, yeah. And which is more acoustic. Now I don't know if you've heard this version. It's Everclear. It's rocking. And it's heavy.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. Year of the Tiger. I just have one question about that. other than I love the guitar solo, why did you hold back lyrically in this song?
I didn't hold back.
He's being sarcastic. That's his.
You know what's funny is when I wrote that song, you know, I played it for a friend of mine, guy in a big time punk band. I go, yeah, it's kind of a protest song, man. He's like me. He's kind of a lefty guy. And he's like, dude, this isn't a protest song. This is a challenge. This is a dare. This is a fight song.
I love
song.
It.
You're trying to bring it on, man. And I'm like,
do it.
Anybody that knows me, I'm that guy. I don't shy away from fights, rarely.
Well, know? We need more songs like that right now.
I agree.
And I appreciated it. Brent appreciated it.
Thanks. I'm glad you like it.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening to the best of 2023. If you are not included in this episode or the next episode, no worries. You will be absolutely included in the last episode of the year that I am already planning. Please remember to click those links below. Show these artists some love and affection. Please remember to like, follow, subscribe, and download to Sound Pollution. Algorithms are a real thing. I'm not entirely sure how they seem to work or not work at this point, but the more people who like, thumbs up, subscribe, share the show, the easier our climb is, and the more people hear the show, and the more people hear the independent artists. So we